Craftsman Days are here at Lowe's with big savings on the tools you need. Save $100 on the Craftsman V20 6-Tool Power Tool Combo Kit, now at $199. No matter what the project is, Craftsman's high-quality, high-performance products empower you to build on. Stop by your nearest Lowe's store and check out the full line of Craftsman tools today. Valid through 6/18 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
You're gonna think I've flipped.
I'm listening.
Okay.
This is the Extra Hot Grape Podcast, episode 519 for the week of July 15th, 2024. I am Cape enthusiast David T. Cole, and I'm here with busty librarian Tara Ariano.
Stacked in the stacks.
And blackout drunk E. Beatty.
It was shot every time someone mentions Chicago.
That hellhole. Welcome to Extra Hot Great for another week. There was one name you did not hear in the intro. That is Sarah D. Bunting. We had to reshuffle our schedule this week due to roofing being done on our neighbor's place. Eve was able to move to a different night and Sarah was not. So we wish her the best. Say farewell. I know she's sad not to be here, but I will do my part to mention David Hasselhoff's hair, David Hasselhoff's rolled up short sleeve shirt sleeves, David Hasselhoff's crotch cam, multiple scenes where it's framed with the camera directly beside his crotch, but that his face is not visible. We're going to get into it in just a moment. So Sarah will be back next week. For now, I will introduce our guest. She is a writer and small business owner. You've heard with us many times before. It's Eve Beatty.
It's Eve Beatty.
Yay!
Welcome back, Eve.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
We're thrilled to have you to discuss Terror at London Bridge, a.k.a. Bridge Across Time, a.k.a. Arizona Ripper, in which
Jack the Ripper is alive, and he's right here in Havasu.
That's right. We'll get to it. We start out in London, though, in 1888. An apparent serial murderer is interrupted during his latest kill and is chased up London Bridge. He slips on a loose stone, falls into the Thames along with the stone, and dies, we assume. Cut to Lake Havasu City, 1985. Now that that very last missing stone from the original London Bridge has been recovered, the rebuilt bridge can be officially dedicated in its new home, Lake Havasu City, Arizona. This is why it's inconvenient when a trespassing tourist fakely slips, cuts her finger, bleeds a little onto the fateful stone, and reanimates a nearly century-old evil who promptly murders her, falls to police detective Don Gregory, David Hasselhoff, newly relocated from Chicago, to solve the crime. So it's a good thing he has a grounding in all things Jack the Ripper and a willingness to pursue crackpot theories. This TV movie, which originally aired on NBC November 22nd, 1985, was written by William F. Nolan, whose credits include before this co-writing the novel Logan's Run. And it was directed by E.G. Swackhammer, who would go on to direct the pilot for the legendary failed sitcom Look Well, starring Adam West, which we'll link in the show notes. It's on YouTube. This is a movie, so we're going to talk about the whole thing, which, by the way, is extremely available. You can find it on Prime Video, Fubo, Tubi. Those are both real streaming services. MGM Plus, that as well. And for free on YouTube. So if you think this all sounds like something you want to watch, do that and then come back. Let's do the Chen check-in. Eve, should our listeners watch this many-titled movie?
Yeah, if you have some edibles around, sure.
Dave?
There is evil here. It must be cleansed. I work for the higher power.
You absolutely should watch this. I really love going back to a time where TV movies were being made and they were exactly this good, which is not much, but still perfect.
I agree. You should not go into this expecting it to be good. It's not, but it's bad in an enjoyable way. And so some background on why this happened to us all. Last November, Edgar Wright, the director, was on the podcast Comedy Bang Bang. He brought up this movie, and it sounded, as he was describing it, so hilariously insane. I immediately started thinking of pegs that would give us an excuse to talk about it. And I found one, because this year, David Hasselhoff's birthday falls on a Wednesday. And if you are listening to this episode the day it dropped, he has just turned 72. God bless him. So I put it on my calendar. I immediately told Sarah. I much more recently let Dave know we were going to be talking about this. Eve, I knew you would be the perfect guest, not only because you are our age and therefore familiar with David Hasselhoff in his golden years, but also because of the true crime element. As someone who, like Don, could say,
true crime happens to be a hobby of mine.
What are your thoughts on Jack the Ripper as a subject?
Well, I'll also point out that I am a San Francisco journalist who freelances. So, you know, I could relate to one of the characters.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was very grateful to have the opportunity to learn about the London Bridge in Lake Havasu, Arizona. And I spent some delightful time on Wikipedia while the show was playing, learning all about this is not a made up thing.
No, it's real.
It's still a legit thing. And there still was this weird little British village tourist attraction, which now it's like condos. But, you know, this was a real thing.
Yeah.
Isn't this crazy?
Yes, this is crazier to me than the idea that Jack the Ripper could come back to life and start killing tourists.
Like, why did anybody think this was good?
Yes.
I think this is the inspiration for Wee Britain from Arrested Development.
Oh, yeah, probably.
As seen in this movie, you know, before the condoization, you know, when it was just like a tourist trap full of Arizonian actors putting on British accents for the tourists.
Yes.
I really want to go back to the 1985 version of Lake Havasu, English Village, because it looked fantastic. But
yeah,
it felt very Wee Britain to me.
Yes, for sure.
There's another interesting element to this, which I'm surprised you didn't mention. Why is David Hasselhoff this cop in Lake Havasu, Arizona, which is clearly, you know, that's not the place you want to go if you're an up-and-coming detective, right? Well, so he was a cop in Chicago, and he tragically tells a story, I shot a kid. And it was exactly sort of the same speech that the cop in Die Hard gives several years later.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I mean, yeah, you thought about this, right? I mean,
yes.
Between this and, you know, like, spoiler, sort of the reveal that the person you believe to be the villain is actually not, and vice versa, it also, I feel like it laid the groundwork for the sort of big surprise in the first act of Terminator 2.
Mm.
So, like, there's this late 80s, early 90s sort of influence that this movie...
Well, because it's also a bridge... What is it? Bridge Across Time.
Bridge Across Time.
It also borrows quite heavily from the 1970s with the Jaws mayor is worried about tourism versus...
Every beat.
Yep. The thing that's killing tourists in the city is also leaned on quite a bit in this. It's a land of contrast.
It really is. But back to Jack the Ripper. Is he interesting to you as a true crime buff?
Sure, because nobody knows who he is. So I think I think it's one of those things that's sort of overcovered, but it is still fun to sort of think about. And we've all watched various movies that involve Jack the Ripper.
Can we talk about Jack the Ripper's process of going from England to Arizona? Because as the show opens, he's being chased by police.
Sure is.
After almost killing somebody.
Yes.
And then the cops managed to get him in the middle of London Bridge, and there's two groups of cops on either side of him, and they're shooting at him, which is just bad gun control. It's just not the way you do it.
No.
You're going to kill your friends on the other side. But they shoot him, and he falls over into the river, and as he does, he takes this one stone with him to the bottom of the Thames.
Yes.
And it is for reasons that this stone is cursed now, or has the power of transference. So decades and decades later, London Bridge is dismantled in London and reassembled in Arizona, save this one piece of the walkway or whatever it was, the railing.
Yeah.
And then eventually they find it and they think, well, we should send it over to Arizona, so because it's probably the last piece. And when they do that, that is what, in addition to the first victim's thumb blood, makes Jack the Ripper reappear in Arizona.
So you're questioning the science.
I'm both questioning the science and the occult
magic
of it.
Yes.
because neither one of them really explains it to my satisfaction. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously it's because reasons and we just need Jack the Ripper in there. But why isn't it Jack the Ripper's ghost, if anything? If anything, I'm going to believe about the occult of it all is going to be that it is some sort of ghostly transference. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Insofar as that you can possess an object and these sort of things.
Sure.
And then get moved across, sort of like a vampire in native soil, mm-hmm. kind of.
Yeah. I don't know why when we spend so much time in the Chamber of Horrors, other than maybe that the owner of the Lake Havasu City Chamber of Horrors, like, financed this movie, why it isn't something that happens in there, like that he doesn't animate one of the wax figures or something. Like, if it could be anything, why not that? And given that he is there supernaturally, I also don't know why, once it's established, as Eve said, that Don moved to Arizona because he shot a kid in Chicago and now he's disgraced and he never wants to shoot a gun again. And then he gets the jump on Jack the Ripper and he does shoot him. Phew, this is a wonderful redemption, I guess. Why would we assume he's mortal now? Like, he's a time traveler. He's, like, been resurrected. I wouldn't even necessarily assume he's, like, vulnerable to bullets. They just haven't thought this through. There's also, as Eve said, there's another weirdo in town. His name is Mr. Ladding. He is staying in a motel owned by Rosemarie, of all fucking people, who's in, like, a scene and a half. We find out he seems like the Jack the Ripper type. He's also like he's weird. Like I said,
he's from Hammer films.
Yes, he does for sure.
Like he seems like the kind of character actor that would be in Hammer films. You couldn't get Peter Cushing, couldn't get Christopher Lee. So you got this guy.
But then he just wants to blow up the bridge. And we don't ever really understand why. I mean, we hear the he thinks it's evil. But like, why does he think that?
Well, at some point they say that he is. I don't know if they use these words. I think it was something like this, but he's like a mental case or something like that.
Okay.
But the weird thing is, though, like he decided that there is some evil here in Lake Havasu.
Uh-huh.
First of all, that's
here
kind
in
of,
the paddle boats. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And the swamp boats and everything. Ooh, look out.
There's evil at the fudge store.
But what I didn't quite understand is, was he English?
Mm-hmm.
Was an Englishman who was having some mental health issues
sure.
who came to Arizona because he knew that this was an evil bridge transference?
Uh-huh.
Or is he an American that's putting on this whole British character because of his illness?
Right.
And he just happened to be there when this whole Jack the Ripper transference went down. It's very convenient to the who's the actual Jack the Ripper switcheroo they play halfway through this.
Yes.
But he also has access to C4 or something like that. That's never explained. So like, there's a lot of backstory we're missing from this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those things that doesn't matter.
It's true.
You know what I mean? Like this is the equivalent of watching one of those Netflix C+, B- action films they put out every 2.5 months. You're like, well, I guess we'll watch this. Jessica Biel shooting people in Montana.
It's Jessica Alba.
Okay, thank you.
And I think they're in Colorado, but yes. Trigger warning.
But see, there you go. Yeah.
Exactly.
Exactly what I mean. They're very forgettable, but he is sort of that for this show, for this movie. I didn't mind that. What I also really didn't mind was the Museum of Horrors, the true star of this show, the Museum of Horrors in Lake Havasu, your wax museum.
Yes.
And you could tell this was a real place.
When
you go in there, because if it was just a set, it would have been theme appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas it would have just been like London stuff, English stuff, some Jack the Ripper stuff, of course, because he's part of that history.
Yeah.
But when the camera's going through, and boy, do they spend a lot of time just walking through this thing with multiple different characters.
Three
first
different
journey
scenes.
Through it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Security guard POV, the mentally ill guy POV, et cetera, et cetera.
Yep.
They walk through, and there's like Vikings and like, what is horrific?
Werewolf. Dracula.
Yeah.
Dracula's
multiple
and Vikings
Draculas,
together.
I think. Yeah.
So there's a lot of non-horror stuff going on here and a lot of non-English horror stuff going on here.
Mm-hmm.
But it looked so much fun.
Yeah.
We were just, me and Tara, on a trip. We drove from Austin to Tucson, Arizona. Unfortunately, not near Lake Havasu. But on the way, we stopped at a store we were at years and years ago, like an old trading post in the middle of the desert. And it was so much fun back then. As soon as I recognized this, oh, we got to go there. That's where I got this and that and the other thing. And we went there and it was now completely just like shit off the shelf from China that you could also get in any kind of dollar store now. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that it was the fate of the Wax Museum of Horrors gift shop. And if I had a time machine, I could go back to 1985 when this was set. Mm-hmm. That would have been like a 2-hour shopping spree in that one store alone.
Oh, yeah. You know that they had like a badass like souvenir t-shirt or something, too, that we would all wear now, ironically, but not really ironically.
Yes. What this story really needed was a reporter to get to the bottom of this. And we've already mentioned her, but a pivotal character we meet early on is Elaine Gardner. She's played by Lindsay Bloom. She is a freelance journalist from San Francisco. Basically, the second thing we find out about her other than her name is that she sells out Don as a source when he specifically says he'll only talk to her off the record. And she totally prints his name. Eve, yell about this portrayal of journalism.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm surprised you didn't hear me yelling when it happened. Of course. You wouldn't do that. Nobody does that. Nobody ever does that. When people say, oh, I told that to you off the record, they're usually lying. Yeah, of course, that made me furious. And I don't understand why David Hasselhoff talked to, which I don't know his character name. I thought David Hasselhoff the whole time. And I assume you did, too.
Sure.
But I also couldn't figure out where she was placing these Lake Havasu stories, because even though like Lake Havasu is definitely like sort of a resort town that people from the Bay Area will go to like, you know, fuck around in the water or whatever. It's not something, even back then in this sort of time when people got paid for journalism, where you would be like acting as a stringer about a single murder case in Arizona and publishing in. So were her stories getting published in the local paper at a certain point? I wasn't clear on that.
They established that they originally sent her there as a stringer to cover the rededication of the bridge. And then,
which of course was ludicrous.
Right. Then a better story broke out and then she started covering the murder before, spoiler, getting murdered herself. I guess that's the pretext for her being there.
I liked her like funnel neck sort of sweater and how she kept saying, can we come inside? Like, and I was like, are you just trying to get into the air conditioning? It's like Arizona, but the climate crisis isn't as bad as it is now.
If you're in Arizona, you are trying to get inside. I'll say that.
Yeah. Accurate.
Fraught mistake they made with all that, though, is she writes the story. She puts the off record on record, but there's no byline on the article when they show it.
Oopsies.
Oh, bummer. Well, you know, and it's not like she needs those clips, but you'd think that you'd be cutting that out and hanging it up somewhere.
We also should mention a supporting character with a supportive brassiere is Adrienne Barbeau as the local librarian.
More like Adrienne Barboobs.
She is Adrienne Barboobs. Her shoulders are so wide on every outfit they put her in. I know it's 1985, but even so, there's a lot of like trying to make her into a full figure eight. She also sadly does not meet a good fate, falls for the wrong English guy in a weird tie, and gets throat slashed in the park.
Okay, that was not credible.
It was weird casting, right?
For her?
Oh, what? The throat slashing? Or that?
No.
That Adrienne Barbeau, like an arguable bombshell at the time, is this Miss Lonely Hearts librarian.
Well, sure, perhaps that, but more that in a town that is known for having a section that is Wee Britain, where a lot of locals put on fake accents and put on puffy shirts, that would be the sort of person that you would be attracted to in this town. It would be like...
like being into cowboys if you live in Austin?
Kind of, yeah. Like, but like way more touristy, you know what I mean? Like, like marrying the, you know, the guy that at in the Mission District that like stands still with a little whistle thing in his mouth. Goes, ooh, 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 and pretends he's a robot. Like it's that. If that guy made a pass at you at the library and you were the librarian, you'd be like, yeah, all right. No, you wouldn't. Awkward English guy near English Village in Lake Havasu would not be a get. Because you wouldn't know that he was actually English.
True.
You know, a waiter in Hollywood type.
Yeah. I hear you. She could do better. I'm surprised she wasn't already with Don, but that was Stephanie Kramer's job.
T.D. McCall.
T.D. McCall, indeed. Also in shoulder pads and a sleeveless sweater in Arizona.
Yeah.
So we all admitted that we were looking at Lake Havasu while this movie was on. How are you more or less likely to want to go there and actually check out the English Village now that you know it exists and so does the rebuilt London Bridge, Eve?
Well, it looks like it was redeveloped into condos in 2011.
Well, the English Village is still there. I looked, it's on the website. I did find it.
So can I get like taffy and, you know, shit from China and actually like walk across the bridge? Can I do that?
I believe that you can.
Well, that sounds fairly Instagrammable. So yeah, sure. How far is it off 40?
It's on 40. It's like not far from Palm Springs.
Yeah. Get yourself a chip, buddy. Stroll the bridge. You're all set.
I can't believe that I haven't done this already, given the number of times I've driven on 40. So I'm a little disappointed in myself right now. I've done like the world's biggest rabbit and big ball of string, and I somehow screwed that one up.
It's a little disappointing to hear about the condos. I would have liked the history to go the other way, where the Englishosity of the small English village took over the rest of Lake Havasu, where the whole thing became English, and now everybody eventually, after a couple generations, believe they are English, and it's no longer an act. So it's like a little bit of England. And that should have been the plot, actually, that London Bridge starts in whatever it was they said, 1971. A couple generations later, everybody's forgotten that they weren't English. And that's why Jack the Ripper can walk around so easily in Lake Havasu.
So apparently there is also like some sort of movie where Sherlock Holmes is somehow transported to Arizona and believes he's in London because he sees the bridge. No, I saw this, like this was like a footnote in the Wikipedia entry, but I think that we got to like the Dracula jump scare and I looked up and sort of lost my train of thought. But I recall seeing this and I am now interested in finding that movie. I hope maybe it'll be Benedict Cumberbatch. Maybe they'll bring back another season of Sherlock and they'll go to Arizona. Wouldn't that be great? not really.
No, I'm for that. I'm for that in the way I'm for the concept somebody put out there for Jurassic Park, but it's the Fast and the Furious people that drive into Jurassic Park as a crossover movie event. I am for these things because these franchises need to go apeshit or go home.
Yeah, sure, what?
Just to hang up that phone, as it were, Eve was referring to The Return of Sherlock Holmes, a movie from 1987. Apparently, it was also a TV movie, excuse me, January 10th on CBS. There is a scene where he's lost in the Arizona desert and finds himself in what he temporarily believes to be a heavenly facsimile of his native London. But it was just the fake, real fake bridge in Lake Havasu. Oh my God, Dave, guess who it stars? Daniel Benzali, Stephen Bochco's poop friend.
Yes.
That also came up in that episode of Comedy Bang Bang. It's hilarious that it has that connection. Eve, do you know the story of Stephen Bochco and Daniel Benzali? We've talked about it on the podcast before.
I do not.
Stephen Bochco created a show called Murder One. Daniel Benzali was the star. He played a lawyer. Yeah. And he was eventually got fired from the show because he was always late to set. And the reason that he gave, and this was in Stephen Bochco's book, is that he had to take his morning dump before he left home. And he lived in Malibu, like really far from the set. So he was just consistently always late. And they were like, that's not okay. And he was like, well, and then they were like, well, you're fired. And that's what happened to Daniel Benzali.
Couldn't get it up an hour earlier to take his morning shit. So he got fired because he would take his shit at 9 o'clock.
Or like take some fiber or something. Yeah. Right.
I don't know. Anyway.
that's almost as good as sitting on your own balls, but not quite. It's pretty good.
You know what, though? I'm in my almost in my mid-50s now. I'm very close to my mid-50s. And I'll have to tell you, I find that story a little more understandable and relatable than I might have 10, 15, 20 years ago. You know what? Listen, I'll say this. If he could shit on a schedule every morning, then like, kind of God bless. That's like my dream. Sorry, I ruined this podcast.
No, that's the perfect place to end this discussion of Bridge Across Time, a.k.a. Terror London Bridge, a.k.a. Arizona Ripper, which, by the way, Arizona Ripper is what they should have called it.
Yeah. That's what he did every morning. Keep himself good old Arizona Ripper.
Is it okay if I go? I just can't think of anything else I might be able to tell you.
Yeah.
All right, it's time to go around the dial. First up, Tara.
So since the strikes last year, there's been a lot of doomsaying about the industry giving up on a project that's not based on pre-existing IP. I've sort of felt like, A, that was overblown, since B, the industry was kind of doing that already. But then I was assigned to review Sausage Party Foodtopia, and now I am a showbiz doomer too. I mean, not really, but yes, the 2016 movie Sausage Party was made for almost no money, and it made a lot at the box office, but it was a parody of Pixar movies that anthropomorphize things that are not alive, or at least don't have consciousness in the way we understand it. And since Sausage Party was aimed at adults, It was ultimately about different food characters wanting to be removed from a supermarket so they can fuck because they don't understand what food is for. And I did not see the movie when it came out. I watched it as preparation to review the show because I am a professional. In fact, I watched the movie and then I watched 8 episodes of Sausage Party Foodtopia, and that was a bad day. But when I got to the end where the food doses a bunch of human shoppers with bath salts, the drug, so that they could perceive the food as sentient, and then the food starts a violent revolution where the humans get either chased out of the store or killed, and then the food takes control of the store and has a gigantic orgy. One thing I did not think was what happens next, but I guess because Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg have a producing deal at Amazon, someone's like, I don't know, a show? And now Sausage Party is a franchise. And since a show has to take place over multiple episodes, the story is about the food characters remaking civilization for themselves instead of humans. It's not that interesting. If you think about any element of it for more than about 10 seconds, it falls apart on logic bases. And now that it's been out for a few days, I can say that an episode ends with a regulation human that has survived the revolution having sex with a regulation hot dog, not only in the way you think, but also that way. And it is upsetting. So
is it like the end of Alien Resurrection where there's like that weird Ripley alien boy that comes up and she has to kill her own alien boy?
No, it's not like that.
It sounds like it's exactly like that.
No. I wish. Honestly, I wish. So we so often say a show should have been a movie. Sausage Party was already barely a movie, and maybe that shouldn't have happened either.
Wait, hang on. Sorry, yeah. I got more food sex questions.
Great.
Do the food have sex with each other?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so let's say there's celery and jam. Do they have sex with each other? And then assuming that we have female and a male, then one of them gets pregnant and has like celery jam babies.
Okay, this is the kind of thing where it's like you can't poke at this premise because it falls apart. Because
is the food gendered?
The food is gendered.
Uh-huh. Oh yeah, there's a hot dog with tits, right?
The food that's a hot dog bun. Yes, Kristen Wiig character.
Right.
The food is gendered, but it's also pansexual. Like all of the orgies are all genders doing whatever. It's not heteronormative.
Yep.
I'll give them that. Mm-hmm. But in terms of reproduction,
finally a progressive food fuckfest we've all been waiting for.
But the reproduction part, they don't talk about how that happens at all. Hmm. And so there is actually a multi-episode arc about all of the perishable food needing to like figure out how to get the currency of this world, which is human teeth, so that they can buy their way into like refrigerators so that they don't spoil.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So
wait, who is accepting the teeth?
There is an orange.
Is there like a boatman on the River Styx of this world that opens up the...
No, there's just like a nascent capitalist who has figured out like how to give these things value, and he controls all that stuff.
Okay, so he controls entry to the fridge.
Yes.
Okay, but my question is, let's say for sake of argument, celery in a jar of Cheese Whiz had sex. Could you create
I'm into it. You
know, Cheese Whiz on celery babies? Mm-hmm. Do they have that?
No, they don't. There's no babies. Mm. This all takes place over like a week.
I think that's a good idea for season two.
I don't think there should be a season two. Don't watch the show. Sausage Party
Fusion Cuisine.
Why? No, you're making people curious about the show. It?
Like, this is great. If there is no fear of pregnancy and food can't get STDs, this is actually that sort of dream of the early 80s that, you know, was offered in bathhouses or whatever.
Sure.
So don't ruin it with gross babies. Anyway, in the animal kingdom, different species only very rarely could produce offspring. And, you know, they would have to have pretty similar DNA. So I think it would be fine. Mm-hmm. And that's why we should all, you know, just never mind. I'm not even going
to. All right, go to the polls. Which TV show would you rather watch? Food Fuck Fusion? Or whatever Eve was trying to pitch.
Listen, I'm so mad that we've talked about it this much. It's my fault for bringing it up, but like, if anything we have said has made you curious, do not watch this show. Well,
I got more questions. If a food item is prepackaged, right? So let's say a tub of cottage cheese,
right?
Or a cellophane wrapped group of asparagi.
Yes.
Is the packaging part of them, or is it only the food items that are the sentient living being and they just live like a hermit crab in a shell?
Okay, Dave, again, I'm furious that I have an answer for this. It depends. It varies from food item to food item because mm-hmm. they establish like a bottle of water is sentient.
Yep.
They do not answer the question of like, do they consider water like flowing from a tap to mm-hmm. be a person?
Right.
Like, would it be okay for the human that survives to drink tap water?
Right.
If he could get some.
Is there ice cream on this show?
Is there ice cream? I think so. Yes, there's definitely popsicles.
So is there like that constant threat, like in Frosty the Snowman,
yes.
that it's all going to end?
Yes.
Yikes.
Yeah, you got to collect human teeth to get into the freezer.
Yeah.
Aren't you paying attention, Eve?
I thought it was more...
Talk like this in the movie. You know?
There's only one human.
I thought it was seeking shelter. I didn't realize that it was also like seeking like your ability to survive.
Yeah.
But I guess that's what shelter is. So you're right.
Right.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Okay, one last question. Do the food items scream when they're eaten?
Yes.
Is it like a terrible event every
time?
Yeah,
it's horrible.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
This is established in the movie. This is how they find out like what really happens when they leave the store. They're not going to the great beyond.
Right.
Because someone accidentally buys a thing of spicy mustard and then brings it back. And then the spicy mustard is like, I've seen horrible things and tells them all, it's not wonderful to leave the store. They're going to do horrible things to us. And like throws himself out of the shopping cart in order not to be taken back out of the store.
Wow.
Commits suicide.
All right.
It's a savory liminal space.
It is a savory liminal space. Believe it or not, there's more about the way this world works in my review at Cracked. So we'll link that in the show notes. And
this might be my favorite Around the Dial ever.
to radically change topic.
Uh-huh.
I also wrote an essay about the late Shannon Doherty and what she meant to me by playing Brenda Walsh. And we'll link that in the show notes too. It's at Sir Decider.
Yep, here's your problem. Someone set this thing to evil.
Eve, what do you got for us?
Well, as you just suggested, I'm talking about the end of evil, by which I don't mean that actual evil is ending. I'm talking about the end of the show Evil, which I feel like so many of your guests have brought up evil on Around the Dial. And each person sort of says like, hey, I don't know if you guys have heard about this show Evil. I know you've heard about this show Evil. I know I mentioned it, I think in season one, and I, you know, so many other people have brought it up over the years, but I'm here in case you sort of dropped off on it, or since there was like a really long production gap due to the strikes and, you know, everybody's schedules and other things. You know, maybe you didn't catch wind that the final season is unspooling now. The final season is unspooling now. And it's definitely worth watching. And one of the things I've been struggling with is there's absolutely no way that they're going to be able to wrap everything up. Mm-hmm. And I know that this is a sort of thing that infuriates Dave. Like, this is, you know, he's not like a total like tool, like, oh, Sopranos is ruined. But it's one of those things where I know that Dave, out of all of us, is probably the most sort of interested in somebody closing some loops and sticking the landing. I don't think they're going to do that, but I actually have come to terms with the possibility that that is okay, because the show all along has never answered like so many questions and just sort of been there and been weird and sort of played around. And, you know, this is from the people who brought us The Good Wife, The Good Fight. Tara, what was that other show? Was it Brain Dead? What am I thinking?
I think that's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which was the only show of the Kings that I did not really watch because it just seemed like too dumb. It tackles like issues of faith, of Catholicism, of mental health, of, I think in a subtle way, of alcoholism. And that makes it sound really dry. It's not. It freaking whips by. Every episode whips by. And the main people in it are beautiful people. It's Mike Coulter and Katja Herbers. The writing is snappy and the special effects are better than Doctor Who's, I guess, but, you know, around that level. So it's like sort of like goofy and it's never very scary. And if you have not watched it and you're just looking for something fun to binge, it's there. It's on Netflix. It's all around and it's wrapping up soon. And they had the ability to wrap it up. So it's not one of those things like where you start watching it. I apologize for various dogs.
Every time I look at the background. There's another dog.
There's five dogs.
There's six dogs.
There's six? Oh my God, you're right.
Yeah, well, you know, my plug was going to be about these greyhounds. So we're getting there. Yeah. But so I think it is worth diving into because the Kings were allowed the opportunity to wrap the show up, which is something that not everybody gets with a weird show. So it's not one of those things like you're going to invest some time in it and then hear that it got canceled. So that's that. My plug. So I apologize, but I do have two whippets here, two greyhounds, my own greyhound whippet mix, and an Italian greyhound. Guys,
we're trying to record a podcast.
Speaking of evil.
But so part of my plug is that I have two rescue greyhounds. If you are in the Bay Area and you are interested in sight, you guys can see this, right?
Yes.
A dog has inserted themselves between the chair and Eve. It's really happy with themselves for doing it.
Baby.
And all the other dogs are like, I want a piece of this. And now all the dogs are in the chair.
My dog is an instigator. I have two rescue greyhounds. One is named George. One is named Eddie. You can see both of them on my Instagram account, which is EveLB. And on that Instagram account, not only can you see links to the work that I do as a writer at publications like Indianapolis Monthly, where I'm their food and dining editor, and Vanity Fair, where I am a weekend writer, and lots of other places that I can't think of right now. Best Evidence, of course, the true crime website that I work on with Sarah D. Bunting, who is not here. But you will also see photos of George and Eddie, the rescue greyhounds, for whom we are seeking homes. If you have been interested in sighthounds, interested in greyhounds, and want to learn more, I'm hopeful you'll reach out to me because not only because it sounds like it's chaos here, but because these dogs are really great. They're really wonderful. They were saved from euthanasia within hours of when they would have died. And we just want to get them somewhere where they can live out the rest of their lives in happiness and peace.
They're real sweeties.
They are. They really, truly are. Thank you.
I got one thing I forgot to talk about when we were talking about Terror at London Bridge, which is, for some reason, David Hasselhoff's character gets into his head that Jack the Ripper must commit murders on the exact same dates as he did back in London a century ago.
But he's right.
He is right. I'm just saying, why is that? Why does he have to do that? Why can't he just kill whenever? What is forcing him to do this? And also, though, he's killing at night and it's the next day in London. So the dates actually do not connect properly at all.
Okay, but he can read a calendar where he is.
Don't defend it.
He also
I have another question about the food.
Oh God.
In Sausage Party Foodtopia.
What would happen if they had sex on London Bridge? Is that the question?
I'm curious about that, but no, that's not my question. My question is, there's fresh food and packaged food in the show, right?
Yes, that's correct.
So let's say there's a carrot. By the time we see the carrot in the show, it's like matchstick carrots in a bag in the grocery store. And as you discuss, the bag and the carrots are somehow one being. Doesn't that carrot matchstick collection have the memories of a carrot going through the industrial food processing machinery?
Okay. Once again, I'm furious to have an answer of sorts for this. There's one of the pivotal moments in the pilot is when they're all having their orgy outside after they vanquish what they think are the last of the humans are dead.
Is it hot?
So they're all, well, no, it starts to rain.
No, that's not what I meant.
Oh, well, it is relevant. It is hot, and then it starts to rain, and a bunch of the food that's only ever seen that's processed, like the bun with boobs.
Yeah.
They don't understand what's happening and like, you know, the softer food like gets raindrops straight through them and they all die. But there's no discussion of like all of the produce grew outside. So presumably if you're an apple, you know what it you've lived through rain falling on you before. And that just never gets addressed.
Okay.
Is there social strata within the foods the way we
is it like Animal Farm?
Well, but you know what I mean? Like, you know how there's like this stigma associated with processed food and even that like ultra processed food thing, like Oreos are bad and an apple's good. Is there any of that?
It's more social strata. Thank you for your question. It's more about size than and heft than anything else. And that's all I'll say without spoiling
a major event.
Do we see food cock?
No, not exactly, but we definitely see all kinds of food fucking. Where like genitals are suggested, but they just are kind of vague about it.
All right.
So it's more just like a hung.
Yeah.
All right. No. Okay. Well, coming up this Friday on Extra Extra Great, episode 307 is Kite Man. Hell yeah. The spinoff to Harley Quinn, the DC animated show. We are bringing in Dan Cassino to talk with us on that one. If you're interested and you are not a club member yet, you can rectify that by going to extrahotgreat.com/club to sign up. And then come back right here next week on EHG Prime 520 for Those About to Die. And we don't have a guest for that yet. So the guest is TK. Good old TK.
A wonderful guest named to come.
Not from 911 Lone Star.
No, well, maybe.
Well, maybe.
If I could get his email.
I don't know what kind of foods he likes to fuck.
Burritos. He's from Texas.
Sure.
Actually, he's not. He's from New York. So pizza. I can't believe we talked that much about Sausage Party fantastic. Foodtopia.
Yeah, I could talk. I could keep going, guys. I could keep going. All right, here we go.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle with ultra-titanium alloy metal. You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water. But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time for water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
It is time for the Extra Hot Great Canon. Presenting this week is Mr. Dan Cassino.
What?
Who is going to be showing up in a few days to either congratulate us on our good wisdom or berate us for not putting in his show. Let's find out what it's going to be. Mr. Cassino, take it away.
Panel, valued guest, I would like to present for consideration for inclusion in the Extra Hot Great Canon, X-Men 97, Season 1, Episode 5, Remember It. X-Men 97 is a revival of a kids' cartoon from the 90s, and was brought back on Disney Plus in 2024. It was reasonably well regarded as a nostalgia play. That changed when Episode 5 dropped, and we got to what the season had been building towards. The original X-Men cartoon from 1992 was important. It was the first U.S. Saturday morning cartoon to make use of heavily serialized storytelling, borrowing from the soap operatics the comics run was based on. Those elements made it wildly popular among the elder millennials and tail Gen Xers who were the target audience, and set the stage for a series of serialized superhero shows that only ended when Saturday morning cartoons stopped being a thing. It's also largely responsible for the X-Men movie series, which, alongside the Blade movies of the 90s, made the superhero movie boom possible. But why did the internet lose its mind over this particular episode? Sure, it advances the soap opera plots, which are so Byzantine as to make Days of Our Lives blush. See, Scott thought Jean was dead, so he married someone else, who turned out to be her clone, and they had a baby, except that Jean wasn't dead, just possessed by a cosmic elemental force, which really messes up a relationship, and the baby was sent to the future. And then there's the rogue Magneto Gambit love triangle, and...
You Americans, so theatrical. Life is violins and close-ups.
I blame soap operas.
Okay, so that's all par for the course. I mean, is there anything more soap opera than sending a baby character away only to have them show up again as an adult before too long? This brings me to the first argument for this episode being the canon, the thorny political argument it raises and refuses to resolve. This episode has a message, and not a cut-and-dry one about acceptance. Initially created because Stan Lee was tired of thinking up reasons why characters got powers, so he just decided they were born with them. By the 1980s, the X-Men became a metaphor for the civil rights movement, with Professor X and Magneto paralleling Martin Luther King Jr. and Malcolm X. By the 2000s, they'd become a metaphor for the gay rights movement, with the X-Men representing respectability politics. We're really good, and we don't freak people out. They'll accept us. Magneto became the spokesperson for separatism. They'll never accept mutants, so we need to carve out our own spaces where we can be ourselves without worrying what the normies think. This episode argues that neither approach is going to work. Cyclops hosts a friendly reporter to show how square he is, and that no one needs to be worried about them. Magneto has inspired a whole island, Genosha, populated only by mutants, where they can let their freak flags fly without worrying about what people think. These approaches are juxtaposed, and both go horribly awry. When the friendly reporter asks about Scott's son, the one he had with the clone of his not-dead wife who had to be sent to the future to be cured of a techno-organic virus, he lets the mask slip.
Because I have to stomach your questions and prove that I'm a person. I lie because the truth is we're nothing like you. Thank God, because it's the only reason you people are still alive.
Yeah, the you people there is not an accident. At the same time, we're getting a gala sequence on Genosha that's serving to resolve one of the love triangles. Until, in a sequence directly inspired by the Pulse nightclub shooting, the island's attacked by giant mutant-hunting robots. Here's the second argument for canon entry. That action sequence. We've been trained for a bloodless death. It's a cartoon. The good guys are definitely going to pull it out against impossible odds. Then we get this action sequence, the one that made this episode an instant classic. The ground is littered with bodies, but it's no one we know, so Magneto's definitely going to save the little moppet he promised to protect, right? No, he's not. They're dead. Okay, but his romantic rival, Gambit, takes an Akira-inspired motorcycle ride straight into oblivion. He manages to defeat the final Sentinel, but is killed in the process. The X-Men can't get acceptance by being non-threatening. They can't get it by separating themselves. There are no easy answers. Violence against a minority group doesn't need a reason. We're not told who ordered the attack in Genosha or why. It just comes from nowhere, leaving no easy answers and no obvious way forward. The fact that this is a kid's cartoon, that Gambit is the F-boy with a half-shirt and a ridiculous accent, only adds the weight of the ending. This isn't supposed to be happening this way. Making an episode of a cartoon to process the Pulse nightclub shooting should trivialize it. It should be tawdry. But this episode isn't. It has a political argument, but no political answers. It presents a cost to violence and uses these cartoon avatars to make us feel that horror while giving us an all-time action sequence. It ends like all these acts of mindless violence do, with the survivors watching the TV in horror, impotent.
The images you're about to see may be disturbing.
Look, I know this is a long shot for the canon, but it's never stopped me before. This might be just a microgenerational thing, but I do think this episode works, even if you don't have an attachment to the original series. And even if it doesn't move you as much as it moved the real fans, I hope it moves you enough to give it a place in the canon.
Thank you, Dan. Eve, you selected this from our list of submissions. Please tell us your thoughts.
I selected it because I heard a lot of people talking about this show when it first dropped earlier this year, and I could tell that people were really excited about it, and I could also tell that these people were maybe 10 or 15 years younger than me. And I was sort of curious about, is this a show that's, like, have they Batman Beyond it, or have they Batman the Animated Series it, or did they go back and do exactly the same thing? And it's weird, right? Like, it's like a weird concoction of the 90s, like the 90s never ended, plus this new stuff. And I'm still not sure how I feel about it. I heard everybody talking about it, and then I just really didn't do anything because I thought, oh, I'm too old. And then I thought, okay, here's an opportunity for me to try to get my head around it. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that I was successful in getting my head around it. And I don't know if that's the show's fault or mine.
There are things about this that really thought were great, and then there's some stuff that I thought wasn't so great. So let me go through the good stuff, and then I can shit on it for a bit, and then we'll see where we are. So this took me back to playing in the sandbox as a kid with, like, action figures or trucks or whatever, insofar that, like, when I was watching a show from my youth, which, like, I would have been 25 when this came out, so this show was, like, off my radar as something that I watched at the time. Obviously, somebody who's, you know, 10, 15 years younger than me is the target, you know, a millennial is the target audience for this, I'm going to guess. But when you're watching cartoons, as Dan was saying, like, you're sort of conditioned to a certain sort of toothless violence or a plot that only goes so far. And the last quarter of this episode where the attack happens and, like, shit actually goes down were the things that you do in the sandbox. I, in my hands, have the Han Solo action figure. He's just killed 500 stormtroopers. He's grabbed Luke Skywalker's lightsaber, and now he has to fight not only Darth Vader, but Jabba the Hutt and the Emperor. Yes. And this, like, last quarter of the episode was sort of that, where it was just, like, balls to the walls, you know, no network notey kind of writing and action. But also it has, like, consequence fulfillment as well as wish fulfillment for all the crazy stuff you wanted to do. Like, all this stuff happens, but then actually it mattered as well. That was really good. The stuff that comes before that, I was extremely bored by, you know, the soap opera-ness, the voice acting. I know it's a continuation of the 90s and they got a lot of the original talent back to do it, but there's something very flat about the delivery there that sort of took me out of it. You could argue that's part of the charm, that it's got that same sort of...
That's old fashioned.
Well, it's old fashioned, but it's also sort of, you know, factory animation, you know, quickly, let's do it, get the voice in, let's go, you know, hey, hey, ho, ho, Krusty's here, he's got 2 minutes to do his voice kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. The part where they actually exceed my youthful expectations, I thought was good. For me, I would say, like, you know, I was 25 in 97, so the show, again, like I say, not really on my radar, but let me plug in Andor instead of X-Men 97 here into Dan's sort of argument that it's real stakes, real stories, treatment of a kid's show. I don't really think this show is for kids.
Yeah, I'm surprised to hear him say that. I don't either.
This show is for the people that were kids in 97 and are now 40-something years old, right? Much like, for me, Andor is the grown-up, more complex take on Star Wars, a childhood morality tale that I enjoyed that speaks to what you liked then and who you are now. And that's what the last quarter of this episode was about. The first three quarters of it, not so much. I mean, there were things I liked about it, like the see-through chubby guy that's walking around but has the eyes of like a squeeze toy.
Yeah.
Apparently his name is Glob Herman.
Nice.
I would die for Glob Herman. I don't know anything about him. Hope he's not like a jerk or anything like that. But as seen in this episode, it really just tickled me. The fact that Magneto is like this Fabio-esque romance cover version of Magneto after we've got so used to Ian McKellen. That was novel. I understand why Dan enjoyed, and people generally who grew up with this enjoy it, and especially those escalations that you would never ever see back in the 90s or the 80s or the 70s. And I understand that part of it. I just think the rest of it was not as gripping as that. And it's too bad that the action part of it was the only part that kind of grabbed you that way.
Yeah, like Eve, I heard a lot of people talking about this show and were really excited about it. And I was sort of like, okay, this is our entree to see whether we will have a new show we can watch together, because it's always a problem in our house. Our tastes align, I would say, 30% of the time. I think Dan is right that this is a micro-generational thing. I mean, Dave keeps saying he was 25 when the original show was on. He was a married man. He was already married.
Tara said no X-Men.
He was full adult and I said no cartoons in my house.
And I just, to be clear, I was never into comics. Like I never collected comics as a kid because they're too expensive. So I didn't really even know really what the X-Men were about.
Right. I have context for the characters, some of them from, because I saw the movies.
Right.
I think I saw all of them, but maybe one. You know, I get the respectability politics part of it. That was very clear in, for all his many other alleged faults, Bryan Singer's movies. Watching this episode in the middle of a from the middle of the season, it's sort of like when we are given canon pitches for anime shows, where it's like, there's so much lore that has already happened that I have no context for. And it's not the episode's job to like situate me midway through the season. The show expects me to have been watching from the beginning, and I, you know, that's fine. But coming into it, sort of parachuting in from this angle, it's like, I didn't get all of that. I got that there were two Jeans Grey. I didn't get all the part where the baby was another lady's baby. Like, all of that was completely obscured to me, other than like something happened and it was bad and someone lost their memory. That's all the context I had before what Dan said in his pitch. So it was hard for me to hook into this. And I also, like when he said this is a cataclysm at the end, is a take on the Pulse shooting. It's like, I did not get that either, even though I understand what the metaphor is in the later X-Men stuff. So, you know, maybe this is me being a dummy, but the voice acting didn't hook me. The storytelling was like too arcane still for me, just coming in at this late stage in the season. And I get why this would be a big deal for people who grew up on the original show. I do not care for Dan describing himself as an elder millennial, even though I know he is. I don't like that. But this was a tough one for me. At the end of it, I sort of was like, this didn't hook me the way I would have hoped. I'll say that.
Not even the Ace of Base song, or the Ace of Base sounding song in the in the nightclub. Ace of Base, right? That's who I'm thinking, right?
Yeah, I did note it for potentially using it in a future Tube tune. So that's a nice little hint for whoever's listening to this one. But yeah, no, not even that. Alas.
Maybe we're just the wrong people for this.
Yeah.
Well, it's very possible. Yeah, we're all too old for this, obviously, to have enjoyed the original, you know, and this is a direct continuation of the 97 series. So, you know, it pays to know your X-Men coming into this. I mean, I know enough about the X-Men. I got the gist of what was going on.
Yeah.
And I know that they were basically, you know, got their own island in the ocean somewhere. And, you know, they were trying to build their own society and all that kind of stuff. The thing about the baby was a little confusing, the first, but, you know, I grokked it by the end of it.
Yeah.
But it was just like, I liked one quarter of it a lot and three quarters of it were so-so. And that math just didn't add up to a canon yes for me. That's all. But I mean, yeah. I appreciate why people that were raised on the original would really get into this. I mean, yeah. I loved Andor is my favorite series of that year. And it was really like I said, it was like more of what I liked as a kid, but now with my adult brain, you know what I mean? And it's a show built for that. And this is sort of similar to that, except for my money, not as well put together.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's put this to the official vote. Eve Beatty, what say you?
I'm so sorry, Dan. I'm going to have to say no.
Tara Ariano?
I feel bad that we've rejected Dan's old man pitches and now we're rejecting his sassy teen pitches as well. It's a no thank you for me as well. Yeah, sorry, Dan.
Me too. So that means, unfortunately, that X-Men 97 Season 1 Episode 5, Remember It, you are hereby not inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It is time to discover who is the winner and loser of this week. I have two winners for you. First one is Joey Pants. He's among the many stars that are joining the Dexter prequel, a show that does not need to happen, but he's in it. Now, good for him. I'm glad that he is getting work. The real reason that he is the winner is I would have put real large money on the fact that I thought he died 4 years ago. I was absolutely convinced that this was a typo because I saw it and I thought, well, unfortunately, we lost him just after The Sopranos wrapped up, right? He died shortly after that. He's still with us, guys. So congratulations, Joey Pants, on being alive again in my brain.
Mm-hmm. That happens a lot with people who play characters that have very memorable deaths in a TV show. Because there's sometimes when Josh Charles shows up in something, I'm like, what? Yeah. When did they film this? Oh, right. He didn't actually die.
Right.
That show.
I am the highly suggestible type.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like the Marion Ross character from Night Court. I can't tell what's real on TV and what's not. So here's my second one. PBS's Nature will air Dracula's Hidden Kingdom on October 30th, one day before Halloween, blah. Now, here's the deal. It's not going to be hidden anymore. I'm a little worried about that.
Shout out to Sarah D. Bunting. That was a late addition to our doc that she got a press release about that and wanted to let you know. So
who the hell are all these people? Get away. Goodbye. Shoo.
He's going to have to move into the Chamber of Horrors in Lake Havasu City.
I wish.
To be a third Dracula in that store.
Don't touch the wax. Your hand will melt it. Oh my God. Can I tell you a story about hand melting wax?
Of course.
I think I may have told the story. I listened to Sassy. If so, I apologize if somebody's hearing this for the second time. But my dad, rest in peace, bless his heart, made jam 1 year. My dad has hobbies for like 9 months. And then he's like, I'm going to smoke cigars for half a year. No, never again.
Mm-hmm.
Jam making 1 year was his thing.
Yep.
And he made some jam and he would make the jam and then can it with some wax on top of the jam. So whatever that does, doesn't happen to the jam.
Mm-hmm.
And then I really wanted toast one morning and I opened up this new jar of jam.
Oh, dear.
And there was the thing of wax on top. And I'm like, well, what the fuck is... I didn't say what. Father!
So you fucked it.
No. Father, what is this? It was wax. You got to take the wax off. To go, we never had this before. Well, this is the homemade jam. This is how you do it when you're at home. I was like, all right, how do I take it out? And my dad convinced me I had to hold the top of the jar with my hands until the wax melted. And then I could have the jam. And I was pretty young. I was probably 4.
Uh-huh.
And I was there for about 10 minutes before he came back into the kitchen and said, no, that's not how you do it.
Dave.
And I remembered that forever. It's never going to leave my mind.
Wow. Okay, first of all, that's an incredible dad story. That's an extremely dad behavior. Yep. So shouts to him. Mm-hmm. May he rest.
Mm-hmm.
Second, little Tara, however, if I was that age, I would have just been like, I'm going to have peanut butter. I don't have time for this.
Yeah. Touche. All right. Who's our loser?
Our loser. Oh, boy. And he is a loser. His name is Tim Doyle. He formerly was the showrunner on Last Man Standing. He was censured last week by the WGA West for posting a racist and offensive image on Facebook. I will link the story so that you can look up what the image was, because I don't want to repeat it. It's pretty bad. And I also just want to say to all the conservatives who are like, you know, we don't have enough shows. There's not enough. Not enough media giving our side of the story. Last Man Standing was the Tim Allen show where he was, you know, a dad who was complaining about cancel culture all the time. So great to know that these people in their off hours are also living down to this image that they have apparently given to themselves. So fuck that guy.
Yeah. All right. Well,
speaking of living down to their image.
Speaking about Last Man Standing, no time it is.
It's good time. Good time.
All right. Since Sarah's not here, it is non-regulation, so we're going to play with the format a little bit today with personal authorization code. And this game comes from myself and then all the Game Time helpers all over social and on our Discord. Thank you guys very much for your help today with this game. In personal authorization code, Tara and Eve will get single TV-related answer words and then in turn give me single word clues to get me to guess the answer. So it's a little like Password.
Uh-huh.
Insofar that's exactly like Password, except with three people instead of four.
I think everyone got that from personal authorization code. That was a very clever name. Yep.
1 point to whomever gives me the clue that gets me to the answer. So you're going to take turns. If I don't get it off Tars, we go to Eve. She will give one back and forth until somebody gets me to guess the one word TV related word. There are some restrictions on the clues that you can give. You may not use hyphenated words. You know, can't German up these clues and create a sentence that's one word according to your hyphens.
Oh, is that what germaning up a clue means?
Well, you know, they just like the compound stuff in Germany. Yeah, that's exactly what it means. Yep. You cannot use initialisms or network names. So no NBC or Fox or stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Proper names or show names are out.
Okay.
Using derivatives of the answer itself is out. And Tara cannot use personal references because that's an unfair advantage. So if there was a word that tied in to something we did recently on vacation, she wouldn't be able to do that because that's an unfair advantage. So
yeah, we've been married since, you know, the X-Men cartoon was first that's on the air.
You can sing song or add some pitch to your words if you need to, but you cannot use the Zoom visuals to sort of charade yourself through it.
So I assume if songs are allowed, we could do like impressions.
Yep. So obviously this doesn't work if I've seen the answers. So earlier today, I set up a Google Doc for our listeners to add the answers to. So I haven't seen it. So it's going to be up to these two to go into the list and quickly pick each word as we play them. So I just gave Tara and Eve access to the list. Don't click on it yet. Don't look at it. Because I want you to look at that as little as possible. Let's throw to Picky to see our order today.
We will start with Tara.
Okay. In a moment, Tara is going to pick the first word, but Eve will start the clue giving. So you can pick whatever you want, Tara, quickly, but Eve gets first crack at it. First person to 5 points wins the game. Any questions about personal authorization code?
No.
All right. Tara, open that list, pick word, then DM it to Eve. And then once you have it, Eve, you can give me your first one word clue.
Baby.
Chili's? Is Chili's?
I think you can give it to. It's chili. It's just chili. But
chili? All right.
That's
all right,
contained. I think that counts.
All right. Nicely done. Hey. First point right away.
Excellent.
All right. So Eve, you will pick one from the list and DM it to Tara, who will give the first clue. Eve has 1 point straight off the bat. And they say commercials don't work.
Okay. I got it.
What do you think the baby back ribs are fucking right now?
Probably sauce, honestly.
Southwest egg roll, I'm betting.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Here comes the first clue word.
Bethany.
Is that housewife? Yes, all right.
Well done.
Woo! All right,
can't
everybody
say
got...
Bravo, can't say real, because it's part of the title.
Nice. All right.
Okay.
Tara, grab a word.
Okay,
Eve,
I got
up
one.
First for the clue. 1-1.
Adam.
Adam.
Nice. You're not supposed to say proper names, though.
Well, that's true.
Oh,
it's
right.
Not actually okay. Related to the show, though.
All right.
Sort of.
All right.
Felt.
Adam Felt. Oh, is this? Ooh. Okay, I'm going to guess this is Batman?
No.
Oh.
Oh, man.
Adam
Caper.
Felt.
She said Caper. Caper.
Caper.
That's Caper. A good one.
Adam Felt. Caper. This is not helping my brain get off Batman. No, I'm going to have to pass on this one.
Okay. I'm going to say marionette.
Oh, good.
Felt. Adam. Marionette. Adam.
Adam, Felt, Caper, Marionette.
Is it Muppet?
Yes, it is Muppet.
Yes.
Okay. Adam. I'm drawing a blank on Adam.
Adam Grossworth.
Oh, Jesus. That's
he's who
no.
I think of first.
Don't do that.
That was bad, huh?
All right.
You didn't say that she couldn't use personal references.
No, that's good. I just might. I just didn't expect it. Okay, I get it.
Mm-hmm.
Just didn't expect it. All right. I think Eve is choosing.
Correct.
Tara, first clue.
Okay. Landlords.
Landlords. Let's go with Jeffersons.
No.
Moo Moo.
Nice.
Oh, is this Ropers?
Yes. Correct.
All right. Is it 2-2?
It surely is.
Eva's pick. Tara's giving the first clue, and it is...
Awards.
Awards?
Yeah, awards.
Emmys.
That is not it.
Why did I pick this?
Is it Sausage Party Foodtopia? That's going to win all the awards.
I wish.
At the TV Fuck Fest 24.
Workplace.
Workplace. Awards. Workplace. Is this... No, this could be anything. Is this The Office?
It's not it.
That is not it.
I'm going to say prize, which is similar to another thing because maybe you're close to it.
Award. Hey, no
all right,
additional
all right.
Information.
I'm not.
Awards, workplace, prize. Is it Cheers?
No.
No.
Should have just said what I was going to say.
Paper.
That's what I was going to say.
Ah.
Oh, is it? I know what it is, but I don't know the word. Is it the Dundies?
Yes.
Yes.
Nice. Okay.
Okay.
So what's the score, please?
I have 2. Eve has 3.
Nicely done. All right. First to 5 wins. Tara has chosen a word and sent it to Eve. Eve is giving the first clue.
Rooftop.
Rooftop. Rooftop. What takes place on a rooftop? Frasier?
No.
Hospital.
Okay. Rooftop hospital. Oh, is this helicopter?
Yes,
death?
It is.
Yes. Good job, nice. Dave.
Good clue. Whoever put that in. All right. It is all tied up at 3. If you're wondering why sometimes it doesn't change correctly, guys, because I'm cutting out the ones that we just didn't get anywhere to save you the frustration of me not guessing Mondale the car off a whole bunch of clues about Mondale the politician, which did not trigger my TV brain. Okay, let's move on. Next word and clue, please.
Tara has sent it to me. I am now going to give you the clue, Dave. It is no.
No. Is it Lejeune? I gotta take it from that. It is not.
No.
All right.
Imp.
Imp is. Oh yeah, yeah. Okay, I got it.
Okay.
Is it? I'm gonna give you the answer because I think either one would be fine. Is it the Caramel Devil? Oh my God,
no,
it's not?
No.
Holy shit. Oh my God. Okay.
Eve, you're up.
Oh, okay. That was your legitimate guess, David.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
No.
Oh, boy. And then, all right.
Yeah. They say no. He's always saying no, and he's an imp of sorts. He's the big imp.
Oh my God. Wheel?
No, imp. Wheel. Is it the robot devil?
Animated. No, animated. I can't make my voice that high, but the word is animated.
Animated. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. Do it again for me, Tar.
Animated. Animated.
No, don't have it.
Game?
Game.
Oh.
Okay, yeah.
Got it. Is it the whammy?
Yes, it is the whammy.
Tara's displeased with my performance on that one.
No, I'm not. No,
no.
Eve is within one of winning.
Correct.
This could be the last word, or we could be setting ourselves up for a 4-4 finale.
I don't know if this counts as a prev reference because it's something that was published very widely. Assuming it's something that was from a previous website, is it okay to say it?
How the fuck would I be able to answer that?
All right. Agency.
Agency. Shield? Is it the Agents of Shield? Is it Shield? Mm-hmm. No.
Red.
Is it Jennings?
Mm-mm. It's a good guess, though. Daddy.
Oh, no. Okay, is it an adoption agency?
No.
Is it Get Smart? Smart?
No.
Pseudonym.
So is this the show alias?
Mm-mm. Scientist.
Is this Rombaldi?
Yes, it is.
Yes.
All right.
Good job, Tara.
Next point wins.
Next point wins. It all comes down to this one.
I got a pick.
Search.
Perfect clue.
Search. The network discovery. Discovery.
No. Internet.
Is it spider with a Y?
Mm-mm.
Client.
Oh, is this Chum Hum?
Yes!
Yes!
Nicely done!
Yes!
Valued guest! Valued guest!
Ah, nice. My references were too old. Spider Finder. What the fuck were you thinking, Dave? Obviously, Chum Hum. Nicely done. All right. Well, guys, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We got to a week without good new shows prospects, so we crossed that London Bridge when we got there. Before going around the dial with stops at Sausage Party Foodtopia, my favorite show ever, and Evil.
Gentlemen, to Evil.
Professor Casino couldn't get Professor X into the canon. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Eve was a winner of this week's Game Time from at EHG Assist and other helpers across the internet. Next up, it's Dan Casino joining us on EEHG for Kite Man Hell Yeah this Friday. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
Wimmy Wham Wham Wazzle, that's from one of the questions that was cut.
The absent Sarah D. Bunting and Eve Beatty.
So, like, if you have sex with mayonnaise, how do you even know?
Thanks for listening, everyone. I hope you enjoyed as much as I did. We'll see you next time, right here on Extra Hot Great.
It's okay. It's over. It's over.
Score by Lalo Schifrin, everybody.
Yeah.